Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are your hosts, and welcome. And welcome to the August book pick discussion episode. We're going to be talking about the August. And welcome to our end of month book discussion episode. We're going to be talking about the August book club pick, which was The Devotion of Suspect X by Keiko Higashino. Hope you guys have all read it, because we're going to be spoiling a lot of things. Not that the book doesn't spoil things for itself.
I mean, you can always come back and listen to us after you finish the book.
But before we get to the discussion, Rira has some breaking news you want to talk about from the book world.
Oh boy, it was so juicy. Okay, so there's this book called Handbook for Mortals, and it debuted at the top of New York Times bestseller list for young adult and children's novels, beating out Angie Thomas's The Hate U Give, which has been on top for pretty much 26 weeks straight. And the thing that happened with this book... So no one has heard of it. You can't buy it on Amazon. And no Barnes & Noble in the tri-state area had a copy of this book. So a lot of people in the YA community were...
It's a little suspicious.
Were though. Like, what the hell? How did this like get on top of the New York Times bestseller list when we've never heard of it? So Phil Stamper, this YA author and also publisher, he decided to dig into it along with a couple of other young adult authors and also like community members, and they found out that a bunch of indie stores in the tri-state area were getting anonymous calls asking for like ordering like bulk copies, like
right.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So I remember seeing this story bubble up on the Books and Boba Twitter feed, which I monitor from time to time during the day. And yeah, it sounded like something that got the whole entire community kind of up in arms.
Well, yeah, there's multiple layers to it. I don't think we can get through all of it today, but much what happened was, so like the publisher for Handbook for Mortals, which is Geek Nation, which has never published a book before. This was their first time. They were guilty of buying, ordering the book in like, not ordering it in bulk, but you know, like they're asking bookstores to like have a stock
right
in their back room. And that contributes to like the number of sales
right
for New York Times.
Because the sales, is the New York Times, is it based, it's based solely on sales, right?
Yeah. But the New York Times, like they know that a lot of publishers do this tactic of bulk buying.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always an asterisk next to like books
okay
that like got up the ladder that way.
Right. So like these purchases are bulk sales / pre-orders. Like they're not like
yeah
actual retail sales.
Yeah.
Right.
And the author of this book is Lani Sarum, who is like an actress and also a music manager for a couple of bands. But the reason why like this stirred up a lot of controversy on Twitter was she was complaining about how, like, let me see if I have the actual quote.
Yeah, I remember you posted it onto our social media. She was complaining that this is why new voices don't get a chance in the YA world.
Yeah, she was complaining that like the removal of her book from the New York Times bestseller list was because of unfair bias in the book world toward the familiar. And that's when she said like YA should allow for new voices to come in.
Right, but I remember you telling me that the number one book that she overtook was a first-time writer.
Yeah, first-time writer, Angie Thomas, and her novel, The Hate U Give, it's about, like, Black Lives Matter. It's about a 16-year-old girl who witnesses, like, a black boy's murder, and it features right. a black protagonist. So it was, like, a very, like... See, like, one of the things that Lonnie Sarum, the author of Handbook for Mortals, complained about was how, like, people were criticizing her because she didn't, like, go the normal young adult route, which is, like, sending out
like
copies,
yeah, and,
like, yeah. copies, like, 2 years beforehand and getting, like, book bloggers to, like, write about it. And the thing is, like Phil Stamper, who was investigating this, like, he checked the traffic on Geek Nation, mm-hmm. and there was, like, no traffic on this book. And, like, he checked Goodreads, and there were only, like, 9 reviews at the time, and, like, 5 of them were, like, from, like, the author and her staff.
Right. So something was definitely fishy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they found out that the book is actually being developed for a film franchise.
Oh.
And like there, and then they checked on IMDb and they saw that Lonnie Sarum, the author, was like listed to play the lead actress
okay.
in the film adaptation of her book. So now like the pieces are falling together and it's just like, oh, they wanted to rig the game so their book, so her book can get into the New York Times bestseller list so they can say based on a New York Times bestseller novel.
That's tricky.
Yeah.
Nice try.
Also, the cover of the handbook for Mortals is also plagiarized. It's plagiarized based on this this print called The Knife Thrower, and it was drawn by Gil Del Mace. And he confirmed on Twitter that he didn't know about this and that his art was plagiarized without his, like, permission.
Jeez.
So, yeah, a lot of stuff.
Just some shady shenanigans all around. Well,
it took 8 hours for the New York Times to be like, hey, we're going to take this down, which gave room for The Sun is Also a Star by Nicola Yoon.
Mm-hmm.
Which was on the list before like Handbook for Mortals like
right.
took the top. So Angie Thomas is back on like number one. So
sounds yeah. I remember seeing a lot of action during the week, and man, that sounds like crazy. Like, who knew the world of YA fiction is so like cutthroat? But it makes sense.
I wouldn't
like,
say
there's
cutthroat.
A lot of...
I would say like loyal. Okay, like. If like the YA community hasn't like heard a peep about this book in the past like 2 years, uh-huh. and it's just like there's no way it could be number one. There's no way it could even reach the New York Times bestseller list without like book bloggers knowing about it. But yeah, like that was one really big thing that happened in the book world while we were reading our August pick.
Yeah?
So
well, there you have it. Before we get to the August book pick, just a quick reminder that you can also sound off on your thoughts about the monthly book pick and other Asian American book news by going to our Goodreads forum, by going to our Goodreads group. Just go to goodreads.com and search Books and Boba and join our group. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. So should we get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get into the book now. So if you haven't read Devotion of Suspect X yet, pause, come back, we'll be here. For the rest of you, let's get going. Do you want to introduce the book?
Yasuko Hanaoka, a divorced single mother, thought she had finally escaped her abusive ex-husband. But when he shows up one day, threatening both her and her teenage daughter, Misato, the situation quickly escalates, and he ends up dead on her apartment floor. Without hesitation, her neighbor Ishigami, a brilliant math teacher whose devotion to Yasuko runs deep, offers to calculate the perfect alibi. His one condition is that the two women must follow his instructions to the letter. Detective Kusanagi of the Tokyo police, faced with a brutal murder and evidence that doesn't add up, seeks the advice of his college friend, Dr. Manabu Yukawa, a brilliant physicist nicknamed Detective Galileo. Yukawa knows the math genius from his past, and what ensues is a fierce battle of wits, one mastermind against another, one using all his skill and wits to uncover the truth, the other risking everything, proving the depths of his devotion.
Bum, bum, bum.
And that is from the book jacket.
This is actually a pretty old novel, right? Like, it's at least like 10...
Yeah, it's like, it was published in 2005, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't translated until like 2012 or 2011.
Yeah, and something that I found out while I was doing some research after reading the book was this is actually a series. Like, Detective Galileo is a long-running and much-beloved series of stories in Japanese pop culture. He's pretty much like their Sherlock Holmes or like their... what's another good, like, science detective?
I don't know. Like, I mean, you mentioned Bones earlier today, but I honestly don't think Yukawa is, like,
yeah, he's not
that, like, antisocial.
Yeah, but in addition to the series of books, Yukawa, a.k.a. Detective Galileo, was also featured in 2 seasons of a Japanese crime drama, 3 movies...
One Japanese, one Korean, and one Chinese. Chinese movie came out this year.
Yeah, 3 movies of this specific story, and also like 3 other movies featuring the actors of the Japanese drama. This guy is like a pop culture icon in Japanese.
Yeah, not just in Japan. Like, he is the best selling crime fiction novelist in China as well, and he's like. Like for this book, he was nominated for a 2012 Edgar Award, and that's like a really big deal, especially for a foreign writer. So it's just like he is pretty well known. And
yeah, and like I can see him as like one of these like USA buddy cop shows. Like, he's like the eccentric. He's like the super smart scientist guy who helps his cop buddy solve crimes. But yeah, before we get to that, let's talk about the general structure of the story.
This was our first crime fiction novel that we read for book club.
And in terms of crime fiction and mystery, it's also kind of a different type. Like
it's a procedural.
Yeah, it's a procedural, but we already know it's like Columbo. I'm dating myself. not really, because Columbo's before my time too. I just know about him. But like, Columbo's this long running procedural about a very like eccentric, doofy detective who's like a super genius, and every episode basically starts with the crime, so you already know who did it, and the entire entire show is just Columbo putting the pieces together and trapping them.
Yeah,
and that's kind of how this story starts too. Like, you see the crime, you know the players. Mm-hmm. And then the entire story is kind of just like a cat and mouse. Like, can the criminals stay ahead of this genius?
Yeah, it's interesting because this book is centered on like the perfect alibi, right? You know the motive, you know who did the murder, but you don't know how the cover up happened. So the entire book is just you figuring out like how Ishigami, the math genius who is helping out the actual murderer, Yasuko, on how did he make a perfect alibi for her?
Right. So Ishigami is the math teacher / like former math prodigy, who is helping Yasuko Hanaoka, who is I guess nearing middle aged single mother, who works at a bento box, like a lunchbox store, with her teenage daughter, and then they get found by her ex-husband.
Yeah.
And Yasuko is forced to murder him to protect her daughter.
Yeah. Someone in our Goodreads forum said, oh, wouldn't that be self-defense? But I don't know. I don't think it really was self-defense, because she could have stopped strangling him at any moment.
I mean, if you want to get into the technicalities of the incident, he was there to harass them for money. And yeah. I guess he was about to leave. And then the daughter actually made the first move, right? Yeah. The daughter smashed something on his head. And then she decided to strangle him. So
I mean, Yasuko decided to strangle him.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess not really self-defense.
No. I mean, the thing I really liked about Higashino's novel, which I've also heard about his subsequent novels, the murderers are never, like, evil people. Mm-hmm. They're just ordinary people who, like, just happen to be in situations where it just leads to murder.
Right.
So it's like, oh, that's really interesting, because, like, we're really used to, like, mastermind criminals,
yeah, Ishigami,
right?
Could very well have been, like, a Moriarty-level, like, super villain genius, but he's just, like...
He's just a high school math teacher and, like a judo coach.
Yeah. He's just very focused. Like, that's his, like, main traits, like, laser-sharp focus and being able to observe everything. And then on the other side, we have the cops, right? We have Detective Kusanagi, who is the, like, the hard-boiled, like, I'm too old for this job detective who, like, has seen everything. He's, like, partnered up with a Kishitani, who's, like, the bumbling junior detective who's, like, ready to believe any alibi, like, super sympathetic, like, probably not long for detective work, especially in the homicide department.
Yeah, it's like, so the murder happens, like, Yasuko accidentally, intentionally, whatever, we'll leave that, like, mm-hmm. we'll leave that where it is, but she ends up strangling her ex-husband with a kotatsu electrical wire.
Right.
And he falls dead, and Ishigami, who lives next door, he comes over, and he offers his help, saying, like, well, you can turn yourself to the cops, or...
I can help you get away with it.
Yeah, I can help you get away with it. I'll take care of everything. I'll dispose the body. You just have to listen to everything that I tell you to do. Mm-hmm. And at this point, the murder happens in, like, page 18. So we're really far ahead. We're just like, okay, let's go. So the next chapter, the police find...
Right.
A naked body of a man with his face smashed in, his fingerprints burnt, and he's washed up on the river. And they also find, like, a bicycle nearby. Mm-hmm. So their guess is that this person, the victim, he had, like, rode on his bicycle and somehow got murdered.
Yeah.
And they also find, like, half-burnt clothes near the body as well.
Right. And the body's been, his face is smashed, fingerprints burnt off.
And they eventually find out the body's identity, which is Togashi, Yasuko's ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in every case, it's like, oh, you suspect the domestic partner first.
How do they ID the body again?
So they go around asking about, like, missing middle-aged men with, like, the same weight and, like, height,
okay.
And they find out that there is a missing person at, like, this motel.
Right, they match the hair of the body.
Yeah,
to,
they match
to
the hair
found in the hotel. Right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the cops decide to pay a visit to his ex-wife, who lives in the area.
Yeah, and like, the thing is, like, they do, like, the classic routine, right? It's just like, oh, where were you on the ninth on the night of, like, March 11th or March 10th?
It was March 10th, I think, yeah.
Yeah, March 11th was when they found the body. Yeah. March 10th is when they think that the body was, the victim was killed.
Yeah.
So they're asking her, like, what did you do that night? And Yasuko says, like, oh, like, after work, my daughter and I went to go see a movie.
Yeah, she gives them, basically, her alibi is they went to go see a movie, they went to go karaoke, and they ate ramen.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, we'll go check it out. And then on the way out, they meet her neighbor, Ishigami, who we know is helping them with getting away with it. And then they interview him. And then during that time, he finds out that, oh, he went to... the university, the Imperial University, right?
Yeah, the same university as Detective Kusanagi and also his friend, Manabu Yukawa.
Right. They actually introduce
Yukawa?
Yeah, they actually introduced Yukawa before, when they first introduced the cops, like before they get called into the murder. Him and Kusanagi are old college friends, and they were playing chess. And it's actually, it was really interesting. I didn't recall this until now, but the transition between where Ishigami says, we're going to, the only way to get through this is to like put your faith in like complete logic. And then it transitions to Kusanagi like asking Yukawa about his like total logic way of like playing chess, right? And it kind of, right there, it sets a stage that these are two, like kind of, these are the two like genius people. They think the same, or they think very similarly when it comes to observation and the way the world works.
Yeah. I joked earlier today when we were meeting up that I was really glad that I decided to read this book instead of watching the Netflix version of Death Note, because it came out on the same day when I started to like read the book. So I started really late. I'm sorry.
But, it's a pretty quick read, though. It's kind of, it's very...
Oh, yeah. I read it within like 3 hours. I mean, yeah. No problem. But but it was just like, it really reminded me of the Death Note setup, because you have like two geniuses who are like who know each other so well, and yeah. They're trying to like outsmart each other. And it was like the whole book was just watching like a really intense chess battle.
Yeah, it's like a battle of wits between two like super smart people. And I guess we can get into the relationship between Yukawa and Ishigami.
Yeah, they're like two sides of the same coin,
right?
Because like one is like a physicist and one is like
a mathematician.
And like it's really funny because Ishigami, as like a math prodigy, his nickname was Buddha. Mm-hmm. As someone who's like always cool and always like focused on just math and like finding the solution, he doesn't care about anything else. He has no other interests, and that's why he has no friends. But Yukawa, he is someone who reads up on a lot of different things, and even though he might have the same intellect level as Ishigami, he's someone who likes to experiment.
Yeah, he's so the fundamental difference between math and physics is very apparent in the way that these two super smart guys interact with the world, right? Like Ishigami sees everything as formulas, sees everything as like as things like problems to solve, right? Everything is a problem that you can solve. Where Yukawa believes in the practical, like, you know, in general terms, math is all about like formulas and proofs, and physics is about experimentation and like proving the proofs in real life.
I thought it was also really interesting that like Yukawa, I think there's like a scene where he's like following Detective Kusanagi, and Detective Kusanagi is like really annoyed, and he's just like, "Oh, like what are you doing here?" And Yukawa is just like, "Oh, I'm just watching people. That's like a hobby of mine. Like watching people and figuring out like what, like why they do things is like my hobby."
Yeah.
And it's like, "Oh, yeah, like that reminds me of Hercule Poirot from Agatha Christie's murder mystery series," because like he's also a detective who looks at human psychology before actually dismantling the problem with logic. So that was really interesting. And also,
I wonder if it's different than, because the first chapter of the book is about Ishigami walking around below the bridge and observing all the homeless people and making like mentally thinking about why they're here.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
What caused them to be here?
Well, the interesting thing is, like, Yukawa mentions to Detective Kusanagi at some point that Ishigami is not a murderer, but if murder was like a convenient step to solving a problem, he would do it without like hesitation.
Right.
Yeah. So it kind of like gives you a glimpse at like what kind of person Ishigami is. And it's really funny because we mentioned Death Note earlier, and like in Death Note, the person who is like more social and more into like experimentation is Light, who is like the evil,
who's actually the sociopath.
Yeah, right? The actual sociopath and like evil criminal mastermind.
Yeah.
And like L is more of like the pure logic kind of eccentric guy. Yeah. So it's like, oh, the roles are reversed this time around. And that's really weird, because even in Sherlock Holmes, you have like a very eccentric detective who is like, kind of not great with people.
With a more socially adjusted, like, sidekick character.
Yeah. I mean, Yukawa seems to be, like, a pretty, like, charismatic guy who, you know, who was, like, kind of a hippie back in his day. Yeah. But, yeah.
And he seems to, like, it feels like he likes helping Kusanagi solve mysteries.
Yeah, even though he complains about it a lot. He's just like, don't you know that I'm an assistant professor? I have to, like, do my own, like, projects and theories, and I have students to take care of. But at the same time, even when Kusanagi doesn't ask for his help, he just can't help but, like, butt into it.
Yeah.
Because, like, remember Kusanagi, like, first mentions the case to Yukawa, mm-hmm. saying, like, oh, like, something about this case doesn't feel right, even though Yasuko, the mother's alibi, is, like, rock solid.
Yeah, but there's just something has wrong, like, with it. He has super detective sense. He just doesn't know what is, like, what's wrong. That's why he needs Yukawa to help figure that out.
Yeah. Right? And it's, like, funny because, like, he mentions, like, oh, like, we asked about her alibi, and she said she went to the movie theater, and that's kind of, like, a flimsy alibi because you can't really check if she's been in the theater or not, except for, like, ticket stubs. Mm-hmm. And Detective Kusanagi says, oh, if she had just, like, given me the ticket stubs from, like, an envelope or, like, her kitchen drawer, then I would suspect something. But the thing is, like, she, like, actually went and, like, looked for it.
Yeah.
And then when she opened the program for the movie, that's where she found her ticket stubs. And Yukawa makes the comment saying, like, if she is the killer, and if she knew that you were going to ask her for her alibi and she put the stubs in the program intentionally, then you have a very formidable murder suspect.
Right. Do you think that's when he first started to think that someone's probably helping her out?
No, I think what happened was when Detective Kusanagi mentions, like, oh, by the way, her neighbor is, like...
Yeah, like, an old classmate of yours.
Yeah, it's an old classmate of yours. And then when he goes to, like, see his classmate...
Yeah.
That's when I think he's, like, a little bit puzzled by the whole thing. Because he's like, okay, like, what are the chances that he's, like, living right next door to this murder suspect? And also they go out for, like, a walk. And then they see... And then, like...
Well, this is a reveal at the end, but he first starts suspecting, when he realizes that
Ishigami might have a crush on Yasuko. Yeah. That's, like, when he has, like, an inkling of, like, something might be.
And it's, like, just because, like, he was, the way he did his hair was not, like, a disheveled way. Like, he was, like, dressing himself up to see someone, which means that he cares about what that person thought about what he looked like, which, like, is something that is out of character for Ishigami.
Yeah.
Right.
So in the end, it was just, like, all about, like, like, if Yukawa didn't, if Ishigami was a stranger to Yukawa, then, like, he wouldn't have suspected anything, I think. But because they were, like, old classmates and old friends, it's like, I think there's something off. And it's all about, like, that, like, intuition, you know?
Because Ishigami, like, he pretty much called, like, all right, this is how you, like, the whole ticket stub thing. Right, he pretty much tells her, like, he calls her secretly from a payphone, that they're gonna come back and ask for ticket stubs. Don't put your ticket stubs, like, in your drawer, like, put it here and look for it.
Yeah, and like he keeps telling her, like, oh, don't tell them any more than they ask you.
Yeah.
Like, don't add, like, any extra details. And then even with, like, the teenage daughter, Misato, he tells her, like, oh, tell your friends, tell two friends. He's very specific about it. He's like, tell two friends about the movie that you and your mom saw, and don't tell the policeman about the other friend.
Right.
Because that's, like, the trump card later. So it's like, oh, he's, like, really, like, thinking ahead.
So they go down this path, and it's basically Yasuko is doing everything he says. At the same time, she's being courted by an old flame from her place of work, which is adding some, like, added, like, drama to it. This is where I thought it might turn into, like, is he going to betray her because he's jealous? Which, like, kind of happens, but not in the way you think. That's the thing with this book, is, like, a lot of the foreshadowing, a lot of the drama is not only acknowledged, it's subverted, right?
Like, yeah.
These guys are just too smart. They think of everything. And a big part of the master plan for Ishigami was to prey on your assumptions, right? Yeah. And that's something that we learned through his interactions with his kids, which is a subplot. Like, he's a high school math teacher, and his kids are all terrible. They're terrible students. They suck. They don't care. And he's like, why am I even here?
The whole book, it kind of like follows this like math allegory of P equals NP.
Yeah.
And like, that's like a really big theme in this entire book of like, is it easier to solve a problem yourself, or is it easier to check the accuracy of someone else's solution to the same problem?
Right.
Which, and then like, it gets translated kind of into like, is it easier to create a perfect alibi or to like prove right. that perfect alibi wrong?
And this is what I really liked about, like, especially specifically Yukawa's interactions with Ishigami, was they like talk in terms of like work and science and like solving problems, right? Like, and P equals MP, it took me like, I don't think I realized until I really thought about what that formula meant, but it pretty much just means like if you solve for n, p equals np, n equals one, right? So it in like generality, it means like, you know, p is always going to equal p, and then n is always going to equal one, because n equals one, n can be anything. So the most elegant and the most basic solution is just p, but you can have a whole bunch of crap in as n, like x plus 2 plus minus 3 plus 4, whatever. And to solve for p, but the most elegant solution is always going to just be just p.
Yeah. Right? I mean, like, I thought this was like a really clever quote, and I wrote it down. And it's Yukawa telling Ishigami, like, much later on in the book. And he says, "It's more difficult to create the problem than to solve it. All the person trying to solve the problem has to do is always respect the problem's creator."
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So that's actually the...
it's like towards the third act, yeah, when he's just like, hey, I figured you out.
Right.
And like, you think you can get away with it, but you're not as smart as you think you are.
I mean, what breaks the case wide open is basically... Honestly, if you think about it, it's Ishigami's hubris and like thinking he's smarter than other people, right? Because he treats the cops, he treats the public as he treats his students, right? Like, oh, these guys are just going to go for the most easiest possible solution. They're not going to they're going to let their assumptions blind them to the actual problem. Like, he wasn't counting on Yukawa being there to see through it. Because if Yukawa wasn't there, he would have won.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, right after Yukawa said that quote, though, like, Ishigami's like, okay, time for, like, phase three, yeah, of, like, my master plan. And he churns himself in,
right,
saying that he's the murderer and he's the one who,
yeah,
did, like, took care of everything.
Well, before we get to that, I wanted to elaborate more on, like, what caused Yukawa to realize the plan.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And it's him explaining to Detective Kusanagi how he designs his math tests.
Yeah, math tests.
Yeah, right? And he talks about how, like, yeah, he... It's hard, but not really. It's hard for any... It's... What he does is he masks... Like, he asks you an algebra question disguised as a geometry question. So if all you did was memorize how to do geometry questions, you'd totally mess up. But if you would be able to read and realize what he was asking you to do, you'd be able to solve it if you had the fundamental grasps of algebra and geometry.
Yeah, so he's just pretty much taking advantage of a student's blind spot.
Yeah.
Just like he's taking advantage of the police force's blind spot, because he knows that they're going to go for the bait that he laid for them.
So, like, Yukawa figures that out and, like, goes to meet Ishigami for a walk and kind of pretty much just, like, lays out very cryptically that, I've got your number. I know what you did. And at this point, like, I didn't realize how much he knew, because I didn't know about the third phase, which he gets to. Like, basically, yeah, he turns himself in. Yukawa realizing, like, Yukawa figuring out his plan causes him to pretty much turn his, pretty much causes him to activate the final phase of his plan.
Yeah.
Right.
And, like, that part was, like, I don't want to, like, go to the final reveal yet, but I, like, I'm just going to leave that for later. But while I was reading this, I kind of guessed the final reveal pretty early on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't guess a lot of, like, the red herrings. I, like, at the time, I was just like, okay, maybe it's going to turn into, like, Ishigami being a stalker.
Right.
And, like, kind of getting jealous and his, like, his, like, ego is the reason why he gets, like, arrested.
Yeah.
But, like, I played into that trap, though, because, like, what he tells the police in his confession is like, oh, I'm a bodyguard for Yasuko because she told me that, like, her ex-husband has been, like, hounding her for money and we have, like, a secret communication thing. And the police are like, okay, we're going to tell, like, we're going to ask Yasuko about all of this. And Yasuko, who already had, like instructions beforehand, didn't really know what Ishigami confessed to the police. All she got were, like, bare minimum details, right?
Well, I think she got, like, yeah, she received two letters that what she was told to give to the police when they asked for it.
Yeah.
And to, like, tell them certain things.
Yeah, so she doesn't know anything about, like, the confession, like, the contents of Ishigami's confession. And when they're like, oh, like...
Well, she knows that Ishigami turned himself in.
Yeah, that's about it, though.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, you're talking about, like, that red herring I saw. Like, I saw right away. Like, the moment that she was on the date with her old flame... And he, like, brought out, like, oh, I've been receiving this, like, I received this really weird letter saying, like, stay away from Yasuko, you don't deserve her. Like, I was like, oh, okay. I know what the last phase is for that note,
when, like, Kudo, the love interest, got the letter, I thought Misato, the teenage daughter, was the one who wrote that
really?
Letter. Because I thought, because her daughter was just like, oh, like, what about Ishigami? He's helping us, like, get away scot-free. How can you betray him like that? So I thought the daughter was
mad at the mom. But I knew right away that, okay, he's probably setting himself up.
Yeah.
Because that was his whole MO. He would do anything to keep them... safe and happy.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, yeah, that, like, I totally played into that trap and I was not happy about it. I was just like, oh, it's so good. But at the same time, I don't like being tricked.
Yeah. Cause that stalker turn came way too, not just conveniently, but it was such a character turn.
Yeah.
That I was like, this is part of the plan. This is part of his plan.
I mean, like, okay. So, like, they ask Yasuko, like, hey, like, is Ishigami your bodyguard? Like, what? Like, what is this thing that he keeps, like, telling us? And Yasuko's like, nope, definitely not my bodyguard. He's been, like, calling me? Like, what? So they go to Ishigami's apartment and they find all the stalker stuff.
They find the murder weapon. They find, like, a secret listening device pointed at the wall. They find, like...
I know one of our Goodreads members said that they thought the listening device was there before the murder happened. Like, he was always, like, a creepy stalker.
She fell for it, too.
Yeah. I mean, like, it took me a while to, like, talk myself out of that because I was like, oh, like, he's so creepy. Like, maybe he was listening to them this entire time. Like, how did he know that the murder happened? But
he was never really creepy, though. He was intense, maybe.
Yeah.
But it never, like, I never got creepy vibes from him. And I think that was what, like, the detective and Yukawa picked up on too. Like, Yukawa definitely already knew what was going on.
Yeah.
But the detective was like, this isn't right. This is... something's wrong here. Like, how did I miss something this big? Right? Like,
yeah.
He did not get creeper vibes, so...
I mean, like, I thought it was really funny that, like, when they first interview Yasuko about, like, her alibi, and then they're about to leave the building, and then Ishigami, like, walks up the stairs, and both of the detectives just kind of turn around, And they're like, let's go talk to that guy, because they get like mad creeper vibes from him. They could have just left, but they had this like gut reaction of like, this guy is creepy and he lives right next door.
I mean, not creepy, maybe odd. Like, it's a person of interest. I don't know.
I guess person of interest or.
But yeah, so obviously, we throughout the story, we've been introduced to Kusanagi's kind of like burnt out chief. That's kind of like, he just wants to close his case, right? And for those of you who've watched shows like The Wire or other crime dramas, you know that police departments are inherently political, and different departments want to keep their clearance levels high to show that they're doing stuff so they can get, you know, money for more cops and more resources and things like that. So having this case be open is like not a good thing. And they have like a dude that not only confessed, but is obviously a stalker, a creepy stalker boy, right? Like, case closed.
Yeah.
But then, Kusanagi's still like, something's not right.
Yeah, Kusanagi's just like, I don't know. Like, I still think Yasuko did it. And he has, like, no evidence whatsoever. And that's when Yukawa is just like, okay.
Let
me lay it out for you. And do we go into the final reveal here?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Final reveal.
I did not, after they explain it, I still kind of don't get it. I get it, but like, don't like. But anyways,
well, okay. What part don't you get? Because I read our listeners might have the same challenge as you.
Just why the extra dude?
Why the extra? Okay, why the extra? So the final reveal is that Ishigami murdered like a homeless man.
Yeah,
the engineer.
Body that they fished out of the river is actually the body of a homeless man, not Togashi, the ex-husband.
Yeah, and Togashi, the ex-husband, the corpse of that body has been chopped up into bits and sunken into the river.
So, like, the reveal is that he actually did commit murder for her.
Yeah.
Like,
so if we lay it down on a timeline, Yasuko murdered her husband on the 9th, the night of the 9th. And
that's revealed later, like, the actual murder was on the 9th, not the 10th.
Yeah. And the body that was fished out of the river that the police found, that body was killed on the 10th. So pretty much the police were on a totally separate case, thinking that the victim was the same. But
yeah. Ishigami totally used their assumptions. Like, he figured out how they were going to try to identify the body, and sent them down this like wild rabbit chase, because like, obviously if they were looking for alibis on March 10th, they weren't going to find like holes.
I mean, it was very smart, because Ishigami knew that Yasuko and her daughter Misato, they would crack under pressure. So the best way to like get them scot-free is to make them tell the truth.
Yeah.
And if the police are investigating a totally separate case, then, of course, their alibi still stands. Mm-hmm. The reason why he decided to kill another person to cover up this murder is that he knows that like, there's no way he can hide Togashi's body without another body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, there's too much evidence on Togashi's body. So by planting fake evidence on like a fake body, he's able to like create like
he's able to design the problem. By making sure that the cops found this fake body, not fake body, but this like this Patsy body first.
Yeah, Patsy body.
Yeah, it delays them from finding the actual body, because basically no one will care if a homeless guy is missing.
Yeah,
right. And the homeless guy probably has no family who would report it.
See, like, I knew that that was the deal with the body that they found in the river. Like, I knew that it wasn't Togashi, because I read so many murder mystery novels growing up.
Like, do they just, like, murder homeless people all the time?
There are a lot of cases like that where, like, body switcheroos. And I've read a lot of Kendaichi Files, too. And that, and they do a lot of tricks like that. But I knew right away, because the head was smashed in and the fingerprints were burnt.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the police, they assume that, like, oh, the killer did that, so it could delay the identification process. But I was just like, but they're going to find out who it is anyway. So, like, what was the whole point of that? And also, there was the bicycle, and right. they had fingerprints on the bicycle. I'm like, wait, why is there a bicycle with fingerprints if, like if this body has already been erased of, like, an identity? Mm-hmm. So I kept thinking, like, okay, so the identity was either, like Ishigami decided to burn the fingerprints off because this is a different person and he doesn't want the police finding out who it is. So that was my guess. And then I was like, I was almost there. I almost figured it out. But but I like fell into so many, like so many of the red herrings.
Fell into the creeper red herring instead.
I mean, like it's like with it's like what Ishigami did with his math test. It's like, oh, it's an algebra problem that's disguised as a geometry problem. Like, I read so many murder mystery novels that, like, that's what I thought would happen. I was like, there's always, like, whenever there's, like, a joint like, murder
jealousy
team,
is what causes it all to unravel, right?
Yeah.
Like, jealousy or untrust. Like, oh, I can't, like, the prisoner's dilemma, right? What if this person turns on me? I'm going to turn on them first.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know.
I'm just like, oh, like, it's already, like, such a melodrama, so it's probably going to go in that direction, but I was totally wrong, so.
So, I mean, so Ishigami's already in jail. So, essentially, Yasuko got away with it.
And they can't free him because he's a murderer. He murdered a different body, so.
I mean, whether or not they exonerated him of Tokashi's murder, he still is a co-conspirator in that murder / actual murder of the homeless man.
And they don't have any evidence against Yasuko, so they can't charge her with murder unless she confesses, which he told her not to. So he's like, well, like, I'm the winner. I get to solve math problems for the rest of my life
and
in
then
the cell.
He writes her in the letter with the instructions on how to, like, deal with him being turn himself in. He writes, like, Kubo's a good man. You'll be happier with him than with anyone else. Like, that's, what was it? He's like, that'll, being with him will maximize your probability for happiness. Like, a very math thing there, right? You know?
Yeah.
Like, which is the type of response I did expect from him. Kind of a very logical, very, like, you know, like, I know you'll never be with me, but I want to make sure that you're happy because you're, obviously she's important to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then Yukawa goes and screws it all up by telling her everything and leaves it to her to, like, decide what to do.
Yeah.
Right. So he reveals to her that, even though Ishigami didn't kill Togashi, he did kill this other person, and it's because he was in love with you.
Yeah.
Right.
And, like, in the ending, like, Yasuko churns herself in.
Yeah.
And ruins Ishigami's entire plan for, like, her to, like, be happy, quote unquote, because there's no way she was going to be happy.
I feel like there was no way, like, the plan was flawed anyways, because, like, he was expecting her and her daughter to not feel like they owe anything to him, which obviously isn't true. Like, I think her daughter was, like, wrapped with so much guilt that, like, she tried to commit suicide at school, right? Like, it wasn't, like, all around it was, like, it was a selfish plan.
Yeah, because he didn't calculate, I mean, quote-unquote calculate, he didn't calculate how, like, Yasuko and her daughter would feel about, like, getting away with murder, you know? Like, with Yasuko, like, when Kudo proposes to her, she could totally just say yes, get married, have, like, a pretty normal life, mm-hmm. but there's like a scene where she's, like, at home and she's thinking about, like, how she can live with herself, like, keeping the secret from the man that she's, like, supposed to marry.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's, like, no way to live.
And then the way she was looking at Ishigami was also kind of like, I had some issues with just her character as, like, someone who just can't make good decisions.
Well, right. That's how her character is introduced, you know? She's someone who was a former night hostess and Like before Togashi, she was married to another guy, or not married, but had a baby with a different partner. And it's just like, wow, she's made a lot of mistakes in her life. And, and she doesn't seem to be the brightest bulb out there.
Because like she was totally down to find comfort with Kudo, even though like she was still being protected by Ishigami. And her thoughts was like, well, like, am I just going to be beholden to him because he has power over me? Like, I don't know. It's something about just the way she thinks about it. Kind of,
because like any like, I mean, I think like any normal person with like an above average intellect would probably think, oh shoot, he's offering to like cover up a murder for me, like what does he want? But she doesn't even think about that in the, like she's just like, oh fine, like get rid of the body for me, because like I just don't want to go to jail because I have a daughter. So it's like, okay, well, she's not really smart, but it makes sense in the end that she decides to turn herself in.
Yeah, and in the end, she turns herself in. Ishigami gets really, really, like, he screams in anguish. And, like, nobody really wins. I don't even think, like, the cops really... Well, I guess the cops win that they solved the case. But, like, it didn't seem like it was...
Nobody wins.
It ended in a very, very just, like... You know those, like, Law and Order episodes where it just ends on a very, like... not satisfactory note because like justice wasn't really served. It kind of just felt like that, like it's fade to black and credits.
It seemed like reading a tragedy in like three acts in some way. I thought it was really interesting how like Yukawa, like he decides to get into the case because they're walking outside and then they see like each other's reflection, and Ishigami mentions like, oh, Yukawa, like, how have you stayed so young throughout these years? I'm balding and you have a full set of hair. And Yukawa's just like, you don't care about your looks. Like, you mentioned how much, like, a man's appearance doesn't mean anything.
And that was what started breaking the case open for. When Yukawa started suspecting there were holes in Ishigami's story. But we forgot to mention one thing, which is like they also reveal what caused Ishigami to have so much devotion Yasuko. Right.
He tried to kill himself because he was like, I'm supposed to be like doing like groundbreaking math.
He was like the genius, but then like the story said that he had to take care of his
parents.
Parents were older and then basically just never got the chance to be the star researcher he was supposed to be. And now he's teaching math to kids who don't care. And there was like no reason for him to like...
Yeah, and even when he was like at some time he was working at a university as like an assistant researcher. And he just found out that like the higher ups, they don't care. They just care about like...
It's politics.
Yeah, it's just politics. And it's just like, they don't care about like making groundbreaking math and like coming up with new problems and solutions. They just don't care.
He was very disillusioned. And I guess he was about to hang himself when Yasuko and her daughter moved in next door. And then basically like something about their eyes like broke him out of the funk.
Yeah.
And from then on, he decided that he would do anything for them. Right. Which I guess is a little creepy. I don't know.
I mean, I asked this at book club earlier today. Like, was it more of devotion or obsession?
I don't think it was obsession, though. Like, I don't think he would actually... I don't think he was actually stalking them.
No, he wasn't. Like, he wasn't stalking them. I mean, he wasn't, like, listening to, like, a secret listening device in the
other room. He was, like... He did only go into the bento box store when she was working.
Which is another thing that, like, bothered me. Because I'm like, yo, like, your boss notices that there's this man that comes in every day just to see you. And you don't think for one second that he has the hots for you? Like, come on.
Like I said, she's just not very, like, thoughtful.
I know. No.
But, yeah. What did you think of Yukawa, Detective Galileo? And would you read more Detective Galileo
I would definitely
stories?
Read more, because murder mystery is my jam.
I actually want to go and try to track down the TV series.
I feel like the TV series won't be as good, though, because I feel like they would just make it, like, quote-unquote sexy and try to have, like tension where there, like, shouldn't be, and...
I guess you're... I mean, that's not far from the truth, because in the TV series, they replace Detective Kusanagi with his protege, who's introduced in, I guess, the third book in the novel series, who's a girl, a woman, mm-hmm. and she kind of becomes... Yukawa's foil, and then she's actually the lead in the Japanese version of the movie, Suspect X. She's actually the lead investigator instead of Kusanagi. So, I mean,
like, I would be most concerned about the portrayal of Yukawa, because, like, in the books, like I said, a lot of, like, detectives in fiction, they're like either like the hard-boiled detective or like the really eccentric, like,
right,
like borderline, like Asperger, like, you know, like the really antisocial genius. And while those archetypes are charming, it's been overdone, and I would just be afraid that the TV show would try to make Yukawa into like this like mad scientist who like burns clothes and does really weird experiments when he's just like a normal charismatic guy.
I mean, he's pretty much just charismatic Sherlock Holmes, though, isn't he? Like,
I mean, I feel like he's just like one of those nice professors who are just like, hey, like, let's just talk about science for
also
like
super
half an
eccentric
hour.
And like pretty much a like rogue element. Like,
he's not that eccentric though. What has he done in the book that was like extremely eccentric?
He burned clothes.
That was for guessing whether or not like how long, like guessing
right, maybe
why
not eccentric,
it took so long.
But he is a loose cannon. He's like,
he's not
got
that
involved
loose
in the case that he had no like that he had no interest in, but ended up being interested in.
Well, that's because he thought his friend was a murderer or like involved with a murderer. So I was like, yeah, like, sure. If I was friends with someone, then I would probably check it out.
I guess I'm just thinking, yeah, I don't know. Maybe the movie, maybe having some sexual tension between the detective and the scientist might inject some.
I mean, the only eccentric part that I can think of was like when he was following Detective Kusanagi and he's just eating ice cream with like wearing like a suit and like Kusanagi is just like, what are you doing? And don't tell me that you're just eating ice cream because you're following me for like the past couple of hours. And yeah, I would be really scared that a TV show or like a movie adaptation of this would try to sex it up.
That's true.
We don't need like an Asian Benedict Cumberbatch to play Yukawa.
But someone did.
I know someone did.
Out there.
I know.
In many different forms too.
Not all detectives have to be hot. They can just be salt and pepper, gray, cranky old men.
I wonder what there's a Korean version too called Perfect Number.
Yeah, Perfect Number.
And then there's a Chinese version that just came out. Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if the Korean version is like one of those dark revenge movies.
It's probably not.
but yeah, any final thoughts?
Well, I'm finally like, I'm so glad that we finally got to a crime fiction novel for this book club, because like the closest we got was Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng, and that was more of a literary.
That wasn't really
thriller.
A procedural. Yeah, that was more of a...
It wasn't like detectives. It wasn't like trying to solve a murder. So I'm really glad that we read a murder book.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one too. And that, you know, it's like a... It's a reverse murder book, right? It's not a whodunit.
How did they do it? How'd they do it?
yeah, I really enjoyed this book too. And I'm actually I'm curious about the other works within this literary and cinematic universe. And I might actually go catch the Japanese drama. I love how
you're just like, oh, I would want to watch the Japanese drama over the Chinese movie that just came out this year.
But there's more of it.
That's true. They're yeah.
I might catch the other movies. I don't know. Yeah. But I already know what happens in Suspect X.
I mean,
I want to know the other stories.
I am a firm believer in books being better than movies and their dramatic adaptations. So yeah. I would say if you liked this book, you should probably read more of Higashino's books.
Yeah,
because he has like four other books, I think.
I think the second and third one have already been translated. The fourth one, Malice, is being translated for this year.
I think it's already been translated.
Okay, yeah. So the next three books are already out. So if you enjoyed The Adventures of Detective Galileo, there's more out there. So definitely check it out. Rira, what are we reading for the month of September?
Oh, our 13th
book. We have now completed 1 year of Books and Boba. Congratulations. Thank you for joining us on this ride.
We are reading Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong. And if that title seems familiar, it is, because we mentioned it in our June or July new releases. So we are reading a fairly new book for September.
Cool.
It's also less than 200 pages, so you really have no excuse to not finish it.
That means I have enough time to work on my other books. I'm halfway through Grace of Kings, a book that we mentioned
before. I still can't
believe
that. Like, you bought that book last week. Book is 600 pages.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's the same size as this book, and I finished it in like 2 days. So
it is not the same size as this book. This book is like 350 pages.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the amount I've read so far has been the same size. I'm really enjoying it. It's like, I didn't realize it was like Eastern inspired, like
fantasy. Silk Punk.
That's awesome. I didn't know I needed that in my life until I started reading it.
Might read it for a future pick, but Marvin might be done by then. That's so good.
I'll read the second one. That'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again for listening. If you want to sound off, and again, if you'd like to share your thoughts about The Devotion of Suspect X or any of our book picks or anything about Asian American literature, tell us what you think about Book of Mortals or whatever that book is called. Join our Goodreads group. Go to goodreads.com and type in Books and Boba and let us know your thoughts in our forums.
I was about to say, don't tell us about Handbook for Mortals, because I read the sample from like Amazon. Well, not Amazon, but like I read the sample that was available, and my God, it's so bad.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you all next time.
Keep reading, guys.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited by Marvin Yue. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of podcasts featuring unique voices from the Asian American community. If you like this show, please check out First of All, our newest show featuring a real unfiltered conversation on career, family, love, and modern culture, hosted by actress, director, and entrepreneur Minji Chang. You can find First of All along with the other great programs of the Potluck Collective by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. And please don't forget to subscribe to Books and Boba. And if you have time, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It'll really help us spread the word about books by Asian and Asian American authors. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on Books and Boba.